So yeah, doing not so bad. I hope it's the same in Canada, or do you still have winter?
No, winter is done. What's funny about Toronto is that there is no fall or spring. It goes from -5 one week and a foot of snow to +30 the next week, and everybody's outside in shorts. So it is a beautiful day here in Toronto. Birds are chirping. It's sunny outside. A lot of us are still inside, though. There's, you know, as much as we're walking outside, we're all working from home. How has that changed your day-to-day activities in terms of, you know, how you work and how you socialize?
Yeah, that really changed a lot in the in the last couple of months. Even we're not speaking about weeks anymore. We're really speaking about months. And yeah, it got a little bit, to be fair, it got a little bit more structured in one way. I got a little bit more planned out how I do things. And obviously, I'm sitting a lot in my office these days, in my home office, which is not that excited if you do it for like 3 weeks or 3 months or something like that. And then also what I did, I kind of started investing in hardware and building a couple of different things, like for some of the studio equipment or video recording equipment. Yeah, that's basically what was for me. And I know that you're building stuff as well, and you upgraded your home office too, right?
Well, this is the thing, right? This has been a big change for us in terms of the way that we work. You know, previously it was us on a plane coming to your country near you, and participating either in our first party event, which was the Microsoft Ignite Tour, or, you know, being at a lot of the events. I love, you know, Experts Live Europe. I love participating in community third party events as well, which is awesome. So we were, you know, set up that way in terms of here's your laptop. Here's all your gear that you would have for travel that you'd allow for the connectivity. And now that we're working from home, some of that gear is still used. I'm still using, you know, my laptop to do, you know, part of this broadcast. Thankfully, you know, producer Pierre is helping us out in the back end. But we've had to build out our engagement strategy based on the technology that we use to ensure that we have this organic conversation with you, the audience. And so, yeah, that meant, you know, going out and starting to source out a box, a PC to build out to help with a lot of the production work and video work that we've done. I know you've built a box so far.
No, well, I did in the past, long ago,
Okay.
when I was like that big. But no, I did not do it, but I'm planning to invest. I also was thinking, as you said, especially with all the production stuff going on and creating a lot of video content and doing like streaming and all that, a little bit more power is not a bad thing. But I'm not really sure yet if I should, like, I mean, there's really not much stock right now for certain devices, and the devices get really expensive if you look at the certain PC parts, like graphics cards or main boards or CPUs, right?
Well, that's the thing. Selection is slim right now because everybody, you know, when the human malware occurred, everybody went into hibernation mode, and rightfully so. And so, you know, people were building out their own boxes and their own PCs to adjust to the new reality of work. So, like you said, inventory has been slim. However, if you're using tools like PC Part Picker, they give you the ability to not only, you know, ensure the parts that you're picking up for your PC are all compatible. It also does, you know, which actual parts are available and who's selling it at what price, right? So that you can get the best foot forward in terms of pricing. I know myself and producer Pierre have been watching a lot of videos from fellow Canadian Linus from Linus Tech Tips in terms of, you know, best practices in setting up your box and, you know, airflow and the comparison between liquid cooled and air cooled. It's been a very interesting endeavor to see my viewing habits change in terms of videos, going from technology and specifically cloud adoption and car modification in terms of building race cars and what have you, now going to how to build the best PC to get the most bang out of your buck and to complete what you're trying to accomplish. And then watching the race between Intel and AMD in terms of their, for the processor perspective, you know, how they're growing their solution, their offering to help enable the masses as well.
Yeah, that's fairly interesting, especially when you look at, like, there are multiple things involved in that. I mean, obviously you spoke about Intel and AMD, but then the same thing on the Windows side. I remember, I think a couple of weeks back, I think Panos like talked about the usage on Windows going up, and I think we covered that even in the show, that they want to invest more into Windows because it's such an important tool, right? And speaking of AMD, you have some interesting news to share.
Right, and that's the thing. So AMD has been growing very rapidly in terms of adoption. Their new chipset series, the 3900 series, or what they've just recently announced, I believe is the new XT series that is coming out, has caught a lot of interest of, you know, a lot of people in terms of those that are building up their new boxes. And, you know, 5 years ago, Microsoft announced nested virtualization within Windows, but it was only supported by Intel at the time. How awesome is it that, you know, I know it's taken a long time, but 5 years later, now we have the ability for nested support, virtualization support inside of Windows. This was announced this week, and this is a big deal. A lot of people, you know, they are building boxes on AMD. They want to gain access to the multiple threads that these chipsets have and made available in terms of workloads. I know a lot of us that are working on video production are looking at the AMD chipsets for the specific capability of the multiple threads that allow for encoding and video production and making our lives easier. One thing I want to make note of, because a lot of people have been reaching out on social when we shared this out this week, this is only available currently in Insider Preview. So you must be, you know, Insider Preview is completely free, but that means it's not a full production offering. This is something you would test this type of functionality. So again, available through Insider Preview. We've left the link inside of our blog post on itopstalk.com in terms of how you can set up. It is completely free to join and test out the functionality, but it is not production ready, just to make everybody aware. It is, you know, available. You can start testing with it today to see what's coming. But the bigger piece of this is the opportunity for you, when you're testing, to provide your feedback in terms of the capabilities that this offer is providing on the AMD chipset that you would like to see changed or added to or fixed before it goes to production.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I see also like a lot of interest in the parts like nested virtualization and Hyper-V in general, not just on the PC side, right? Like on the personal computing side, but also on the server side. AMD obviously is also crushing it with server CPUs as well. And so a lot of interesting things are happening there when it comes to nested virtualization. And as you said, there are many cases for nested virtualization. Some of them are very obvious, like when we, for example, want to do a Hyper-V box and head up some labs and do some virtualized servers, kind of like Inception. That is one thing. But what a lot of people don't know is, for example, also if you use a technology when it comes to containers, especially on the Windows platform, you have like two container runtimes available. So one is the like Windows container runtime. This is like similar to the Linux container runtime. But then you can also start a container in as Hyper-V isolated container, or Hyper-V container. And then you get kind of like a mix of a container and a virtual machine. So you get that secure boundary a virtual machine provides with the Hyper-V isolation technology. But it's still as fast, and it's still the container. It's still the same image. It's still the same, everything the same. But you get some extra isolation and security on it. And that also helps if you do some crazy stuff when it comes to like different operating systems and so on. And this is something we need. So if you want to run Hyper-V containers inside a virtual machine, this is also something which you now can do on AMD CPUs, right? Before, in the server space, you just had to have Intel CPUs. You can create the virtual machine and run Hyper-V containers in that. There's some interesting stuff going on there as well. And again, I'm a huge fan of people sometimes don't even know how much Hyper-V technology we have all over Microsoft. It's not always called Hyper-V. It's also in security features. Or if you were wondering that the Windows subsystem for Linux 2 is also based on Hyper-V technology.
Did you know even building out applications for Android are utilizing, you know, the Hyper-V nested technology now made available on AMD chipsets for upcoming devices like the Microsoft Duo, which I know you probably have a pre-order in for to get that device when it comes out. It's amazing in terms of the utilization. But you know there's you hit a great point in terms of containerization and what's happening in regards to containerization in respect to management, right? When we're adopting more container technology and what have you, you know, how many third-party applications do we need to go through in terms of the management of containers that are now being deployed seamlessly?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and this is, I think, we talked about it before, this is closing the loop greatly. There was also a very large announcement, at least I think, for a new container extension in Windows Admin Center. Now, this really is done and is described as kind of like helping the IT pros work with Windows containers. I mean, there are a couple of things which this new update can do. I mean, you were able to manage parts of your Windows containers as well. You had, for example, access directly to the logs of the containers and stuff like that. But now you get some additional management capabilities. So, for example, you can now run the container, stop a container, do all the management tasks around the container directly from within Windows Admin Center. So basically, you get a UI now to manage your Windows containers, right? So that is one of the great parts. But there is also some additional functionality. And I'm really like, I love that feature. It's now helps us IT pros, if we need to go out and modernize our applications, what in the container world, what you usually do is you build your own container images and you basically layer them. So you have a base image and then you put an application layer or framework layer and then at the end the application, and then you can basically start it up and so on. I'm not going too deep into that. We have some great blog posts to describe that. But until today, you basically went out and you needed to create your own Docker file, right? So you needed to go out and write your code and write it out and basically say, okay, copy now, take that base image, copy now that file, install, run that script, and so on, which can be like a lot of learning and not so fast. And the team around Windows Admin Center and Windows Containers try to make that step way easier. So you can now go out and build your container images and your Docker files directly within Windows Admin Center. So you can say, hey, I want to virtualize or containerize that specific application. And then you select that, you select the base image, you make sure there are some templates, for example, for IIS workloads, for web applications. You can even go out and select the Visual Studio solution, and then you select which .NET framework version you want to run. And then this will then create the Docker file for you, but also directly a container image. And then there is an additional functionality which allows you to push that container image to a container registry, which can be, for example, the Azure Container Registry. And from there, you can then go out and deploy it, for example, either on Azure Kubernetes Service, AKS, or even at Azure Container Instance, right? So this is for me, I love that. And I hope like there we will see much, much more of this. But this makes, like, especially when it comes to modernize Windows applications, I think that really can help getting started with that.
Now, this is awesome because the fact that it's you're going through the GUI, the creation of these containers, the management of these containers, the sharing of the images themselves. Previous to, you know, I was doing this via, you know, loading Docker and then doing it through the command prompt in terms of creation. You got to remember all these. I have a notepad that has all my commands stored that I would go through in terms of spinning up new containers as required. Where here now lies in the advantages of using the single pane of glass to do the management of your servers and then the containers that reside on your servers and then the issuing of said containers for resources like applications. Where do you see this going from here in terms of the evolution now of container utilization through Admin Center?
Yeah, so I mean, I spoke to the team a little bit before they actually released it. I was also able to have a look, early look, but it really addresses the gap we had between like containers and the IT pro audience a little bit, right? If you were running, if you were a developer, you were really like focusing on that and see, oh, that's easy peasy. But then at the end, there's still like, if you go to production with this, still someone needs to actually know like how to actually manage that platform and secure it and make sure the right people have access to go out and deploy it, or you want just like take over applications as well, which probably there's not even a developer anymore around in your company, and you just have the application and you want to containerize it. So this is something where we like this extension can definitely help. But then I guess in the future we will see much, much more like adding more templates to it to make it even easier. Again, this is all my guesses, right? I'm not
have a crystal ball in front of you.
But right. We will see. I guess there's a lot of like, if you're using it, you realize there is some parts where you have some limitations, which like I think that would be something we could add. And again, that is where we now, and especially also the Windows Container Teams, wants your feedback to figure out, hey, what are the next steps you want to do, right? Right now, it's a really good like enablement to basically create those container images and also manage them on Windows hosts and then upload them to the container registry. But what else should we add? So again, if you are having feedback on this and things, first of all, try it out. Try the new extension. You find the link in our blog post. And then share off your feedback. Share what you want. Share that with us so we can talk to the Windows Container Team to make sure that like they can work on this and see like what you want to have improved.
So since we have this venue to speak on, I'd love to offer up a suggestion. I would love to see governance rules come into play in terms of containerization management through Windows Admin Center, the ability to invoke, you know, just-in-time configuration or access to say containers, and the ability to even manage what container images can be used for what projects, because we're starting to see more of that adoption creep in regards to people's deployment of Azure and the tools starting to adopt that. I would love to see that implementation come up for containers as well through the Windows Admin Center. So there is that one single pane of glass. Again, we don't have the crystal ball, so we don't know what's going on. But like you, our audience that's watching this episode, you can, you know, it's that easy to make your suggestion in terms of how do we improve the services and solutions that are available, whether it's in the comments below in terms of where you're watching this video, either in the blog post or in other places like LearnTV. You have the ability to provide that input now in regards to how to make the services better. So speaking of, you know, governance and implementation of said solutions, there was an announcement this week that actually now extends Azure Policy over to Azure Cosmos DB. And this is the availability now for those that require a flat table for quick access to information. A couple of the projects I've actually worked on is, you know, having the ability for devices like HoloLens or IoT to seamlessly get information from Cosmos DB. The challenges previous to have been security. There are methods of authentication to ensure that the device is who the device is, says it is in terms of getting access to that data. But how do you govern that from an endpoint strategy perspective? And how do you ensure that, you know, this device, who says it is, and it's coming in from the proper IP, can actually gain access to this information? And for how long, you know, can this information be accessible from this device? The whole ability through Azure Policy made available falls in suit with the entire Azure Policy gamut that's currently available, offered directly down to Cosmos DB. So here's the full-on Azure Policy documentation. This includes IP filtering, just-in-time configuration, the ability to govern over how many hours, minutes, days, individuals or devices have access to either write data or read-only data or whatever, you know, the configuration may be. If data is the new currency, and especially now we're producing even more data because of the fact that we're all at home and working from our devices remotely, it's much more of a first thought process now in regards to how important security is, how important it is to govern over your data. The ability to use a flat file service like Cosmos DB is important, especially with these devices that require instant gratification of information. Implementing Azure Policy functionality, encompassing that, you know, governance umbrella across data access now, right into Cosmos DB, it's only going to get better in terms of how we secure what gains access to what data.
Yeah, I love, I mean, we talked about this a little bit before the show, and I was like surprised how deep that like integration goes, right? I mean, sometimes it is like, okay, we use something existing and we start using, let's say, policy or automation or whatever for another service, and it just does the tip of the iceberg. But now, like as you explained, it can do much, much more. It goes really deep into that integration. And what I really love is that not just the Cosmos DB team went out and built something by themselves. It's really like aligned with Azure policy, which we already have, and people already know how to use it and govern. They can now extend this knowledge for a PaaS service like Cosmos DB. And that is, I really like that. Like when things, I love when a plan comes together, right? So this is really exciting. Absolutely.
Well, uniformity is key, right? So if you have this practice that's enabling your resources in Azure, that's, you know, governing over what VMs can be spun up and, you know, what containers can be deployed, now having the ability to extend it across your databases as well is key. So let's continue on with the news. And Thomas, you're up next.
Yes. So we have another great news to share. This came just in last night for my time, or morning, your time, depending on which time zone you are. But now we are generally available for Azure File Shares with on-prem Active Directory integration. So we talked about this a little bit of a while ago. And this basically allows you to use Azure Files, and this is basically a file share in Azure, and integrate this file share with an on-prem Active Directory. So you can still get like your permissions you have in your Active Directory. You can use that now for a Azure File Share, which is great. So especially also in scenarios with Windows Virtual Desktop and others, you can combine that as well. And we had a lot of customers looking forward to this. And this one now is generally available, so you can start using it. You get all the support you need. And again, it's absolutely a great service. If you want to know more how to do it, by the way, there's obviously some great documentation out there. But we also have this video from February where we were talking while they announced the preview about how to actually integrate it. And this, like, I think it's around the 20 minutes video where we are talking and go through demos, how you set this up and do the integration. And there are a couple of cool things, especially also with network access and stuff like that, which we cover in that video. So definitely check that out. And really, like, if you want to remove your file servers, get rid of all these on-prem solutions, this is basically a way of running serverless file shares for your employees, for example, wherever they are, especially in these times where they work from home or wherever. I also have to be very careful about this, because also this is not like just for everyone, right? If you're currently using SharePoint Online, you're probably better off of using that and OneDrive. But there are a lot of customers which have certain needs and have to have certain requirements where they actually need file shares, especially also when you have an application which can only access a SMB share, right? So that also works, obviously, in the same manner.
Well, I've seen a slew of implementations of Azure File Share. A couple of organizations I work with in terms of construction companies that are out in these areas where the infrastructure has just been put out there, and you know, internet connectivity is very sparse, and so having the ability to do file share for these boxes remotely that handle that, you know, centralized network or localized network for that, you know, rural area or for that construction site is very important. This, you know, it came up yesterday in the Windows Server Virtualization Summit. It's a weekly event, a presentation that are currently happening in terms of Azure File Share. The webinar series it was yesterday, and it'll be again next week. And ping us if you want further details on that. The question did come up in terms of Azure File Services in regards to, can it be connected directly to AD and not require Azure AD? And so this, you know, it's timely in regards to this. And this, the world is changing. The need for security and capability of access to information is very important, but to do so in a secure way. And so this availability now makes it, you know, much easier for that leap into the cloud in terms of resources. Like you said, for certain applications require SMB, you have that ability to have that functionality streamlined into your current practices.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, what I just want to highlight, because we also get a lot of questions around this. Yes, you can, for example, do different integrations. Also, still Azure File Sync is still there. So if you want to have that cache server with your Windows server in your office, you can still have that as well, integrating, and it also works together with Azure Files. So that's absolutely also an option. So there is now plenty of options where you can use this and integrate this in your company.
As producer Pierre likes to make fun of me, it's a plethora of options that are available. All right, so let's continue on with the news. So let's talk about what's coming up next in terms of events. And I know, Thomas, there's an event coming up next week that you're participating in.
Yes, so there are two things I want to talk about. I just realized you brought up a very good point. First of all, we are still running the Windows Server mini webinar series. I hope I got this right. So yesterday, on Thursday, we had Oren Thomas speaking about hybrid integration. He covered also Azure File Sync, for example. Next week, we have producer Pierre speaking on Thursday about, what was it again? High availability. He just told me that. So
in our ears.
in my ears, which I just realized I don't have the earbud, so it's a little bit tricky now. But so he is going to speak about high availability for Windows Server, not just on-prem, but also in Azure. And there's some cool things he will show about that. And then a week later, on Thursday, we will have a webinar on containerization and about how you can use Windows containers. We're also going to show a demo of Windows Admin Center, creating a container image, uploading it to the container registry in Azure, and then deploying it on AKS or Azure Container Instance. So definitely check that out. And the other thing I want to share is a little bit less Microsoft, maybe? Well, it's not true. Today, it's probably even more Microsoft than ever before. So it's the Microsoft European Virtual Open Service Summit next week. That one is on, if I remember correctly, on Tuesday. And we have a really top speakers there. So there will be like four different tracks covering from infrastructure and ops to innovation, data and AI, and then also a developer track. And if you go, you can see it here on my screen. We put the link. You can register there, and you can see here the full agenda. And you can see here we have some really high-class speaker here, with Erica, the CEO of Git, COO of GitHub, for example. We also have not just Microsoft people. We also have people from Red Hat, Suzy, and others speaking there as well as a couple of cloud advocates like Abel Wang, and even myself. They also allowed me to speak there, so that's awesome. Again, this is going to be super interesting. We have people like Gabe Moroy. We also have Brenton Burns and many, many other people there at this event. So definitely check that out. It's not just for like open source in general, but much, much more if you're interested in that.
That's awesome. And the whole ability to, you know, because it's virtualized, I can go on from North America. Time zones would be a bit of a challenge, especially the early morning ones, just because it'll be 6 hours ahead for me. But you know, the availability of the events being virtualized now means that everybody can gain access to the information at all times. So let's jump ahead in regards to what's happening for MS Learn. So our MS Learn module of the week this week is the Manage Identity and Access in Azure Active Directory. You may be sensing a theme here in regards to what we've been talking about in terms of security and secure access to your information and data. Here's a great way to get started in your journey in terms of your adoption of Azure Active Directory to extend your existing Active Directory implementation using AD Connect and other functionality. If this is the first time that you're venturing out, you know, in terms of, hey, Azure File Share, I can now use AD on-prem for that authentication to gain access to those files. And now I want to take it a step further in terms of my adoption for Azure. Here's a great module to start you on that journey in respect to upskilling on adoption of Azure AD. That's it for the show today. It's been a quick one, and there's a lot of information that we had shared. Do check out our blog, itopstalk.com, where you will see a full recap of today's show and all links that are made available on there. I'm your host, Anthony Bartolo, joined by Thomas Maurer. I can be followed at Wireless Life. Thomas can be followed at
Thomas Maurer.
Thomas Maurer, easy and simple to remember. And producer Pierre can be followed at Wired Canuck. Great show, everybody. We'll see you all next week. Have a great weekend.